the death penalty just won't die. The Supreme Court made landmark decisions, almost killing it. But in January 1983, it was the cover story on Time magazine. In that article, it was reported that 1,137 people were on death row, which was twice as many as in 1979 and more than ever before. Update. In 2020, the number was about 2,500, which has declined in the last 18 years. At any rate, over half of those in that 1983 article were in four states, 189 in Florida, 153 in Texas, and 118 each in Georgia and California. A dozen of those killers were teenagers. That 1983 Time magazine article explained that the long-building public sentiment to get tough on violent criminals, to kill the killers, seemed to be on the verge of putting the nation's 15 electric chairs, 9 gas chambers, and several gallows and ad hoc firing squads back to regular work. In addition, 5 states have a new, particularly American technique for killing, lethal injections, which could increase public acceptance of executions. Experts on capital punishment, both pro and con, agree that as many as 10 to 15 inmates could be put to death this year. That's 1983. A total not reached since the early 1960s. That article said, quote, "People on death row are simply running out of appeals," says the Reverend Joe Engel, a prison activist and death penalty opponent. "I fear we are headed toward a slaughter." According to a 1983 Gallup poll, 72% of Americans favored the death penalty. But according to a 2019 Gallup poll, only 36% of Americans favored the death penalty. They preferred life imprisonment without the possibility of parole over the death penalty. Should we encourage or discourage the death penalty? Should we kill killers, or should we kill the death penalty? Those against the death penalty say things like, it's downright murder. According to one member of the American Civil Liberties Union, each execution is merely, quote, "spectacle, a dramatic, violent homicide under the law," end of quote. And the society enforcing it is, quote, "deeply uncivilized," end of quote. Some have gone so far as to suggest that capital punishment attempts to vindicate one murder by committing a second one, and furthermore, that the second murder is more reprehensible because it's officially sanctioned and done with great ceremony in the name of all the people. To complicate matters, both those for and those against the death penalty argue that doing it their way is a deterrent. The battle rages. For example, William F. Buckley has said that capital punishment is a, quote, "strong, plausible deterrent," end of quote. Yet a governor has said, quote, "there has never been any evidence that the death penalty deters," end of quote. While some states which abolish it find their rates of homicides have dropped, some that continue to execute people found that the rates of homicide dropped too. Similarly, studies in Canada, England, and other countries did not particularly find capital punishment to be a deterrent. Time magazine concludes, quote, "Today, a comprehensive study in the U.S. by the National Academy of Sciences in 1978 also found that the death penalty had not proven worthy as a deterrent." Well then, is capital punishment uncivilized? What is the biblical perspective? Years ago, a lady wrote to the editor of a Baptist magazine in Texas. She said, quote, "You may not believe in capital punishment, but God does. He sent his son to die on the cross for us because we're all murderers in our heart," 1 John 3:15. "We would have to die according to God's law, but Christ took our place. In the Old Testament, the punishment for murder was death to be carried out by the civil government," Numbers 35:19. When God said, "Thou shalt not kill," he was speaking to the individual, not the state, end of quote. The editor replied, quote, "Contrary to your thinking, I regard the crucifixion of the innocent Christ by the hands of sinful man as the best possible argument against capital punishment. Because of our sin, we deserve death, and in mercy toward us, he died in the flesh in order to pay our debt. His death was part of the divine plan for the salvation of men. But there is no slight intimation in the Bible that men who put him to death are justified in doing so. May I suggest, before asking, saying God believes in capital punishment, that you go back to the first murder case in history and see what punishment God meted out to Cain. He was careful to mark the man so that other men would not attempt to administer capital punishment to him," end of quote. All of which is to say that even Christians disagree on capital punishment. So what is the biblical position on capital punishment? May I suggest that the Old Testament teaches capital punishment. Because of the sanctity of life, murder was to be punished by death. This principle was established in Genesis 9:16, which says, quote, "Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man," end of quote. Note that the basis for this dramatic punishment was that man was made in the image of God. Murder, in effect, is an outrage against God. The application of this command was to extend to the entire human family. Noah, to whom it was given, stood at the head of a new beginning of the human race. What was given to him, like permission to eat meat and the promise of no future flood, was not confined to any one group or family or nation. That means that the punishment was to be carried out as stated, quote, "by men," end of quote, thus leaving some flexibility as to its actual instrumentality. Someone may legitimately ask, if God favors capital punishment, why did he spare Cain? The answer to that is found in the principle that theologians call progressive revelation. God did not yet reveal the command for capital punishment, so he did not demand the death of Cain. Some have argued that life is sacred and therefore we should not practice capital punishment. One lawyer ridiculed capital punishment by saying, "We say we think human life is sacred, and then to prove it, we kill somebody. That's crazy." But Genesis 9:6 argues that life is sacred, and therefore the death penalty is to be practiced. Murder is more serious than shoplifting or embezzlement. Because life is sacred, the taking of life is serious and deserves more punishment than a fine or imprisonment, or even life imprisonment. We must affirm that people are made in the image of God. Life is sacred. You do not destroy that which is holy. The death penalty is also incorporated into the Mosaic Code. Moses said, quote, "He who strikes a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death," Exodus 21:12. There is, however, a very significant difference. In Genesis, capital punishment was demanded for murder only. In the Mosaic law, It is extended to other offenses. The list includes murder, Exodus 21:12, rape, Deuteronomy 22:25 says, quote, but if a man finds a betrothed young woman in the courtyard, and the man forces her and lies with her, then only the man who lies with her shall be put to death. Incest is also worthy of death. The scripture says, quote, the man who lies with his father's wife has uncovered his father's nakedness. Both of them shall be put to death. Their blood shall be upon them. If a man lies with his daughter-in-law, both of them shall be put to death. They have committed perversion. Their blood shall be upon them. If a man lies with a male as he lies with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination. They shall be put to death. Their blood shall be upon them. Leviticus 20, verses 11 through 13. Sodomy was worthy of death according to the Mosaic legislation. Quote, if a man mates with a beast, he shall surely be put to death, and you shall kill the beast. If a woman approaches any beast and mates with it, you shall kill the woman and the beast. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood is upon them. Leviticus 20, 15 and 16. Kidnapping is included. Quote, he who kidnaps a man and sells him, or if he is found in his hand, shall surely be put to death. Exodus 21:16. The manner of execution is sometimes mentioned, such as stoning or burning. Where it is not indicated, one is left entirely to conjecture as to what method was to be used. This brings up the whole issue of the means of execution. The electric chair, first used in 1890, was meant to be an improvement over the gallows. The gas chamber, first used 34 years later, seemed even more progressive. In 1982, Charles Brooks Jr. was the first U.S. prisoner ever legally executed by injection. Many have promoted this idea as the means of execution, claiming it is more humane. State Senator Edward Kirby has said, quote, technology has come a long way since the electric chair. Because an injection is less painful and less offensive, it would be foolish not to use it. But not all agree with that. Someone else has said a lethal injection is all the more obscene because it seems as safe and painless. It's an outrageous high-tech offense against human decency. States vary widely on their means of execution. Gary Gilmore died before a Utah firing squad in 1977. Other methods include the electric chair, the gas chamber, and now lethal injection. Washington gives the condemned a choice between injection and hanging. Personally, I would say the means should be as quick as possible, but biblically, that is not the issue. A Notre Dame professor of technology has said, quote, the search for a humane way of killing is a bunch of sentimental secular humanism. Why do you want to be humane? To reassure yourself? I would have said that stoning was not exactly the most humane way of execution either. The Mosaic Law also brings up the issue of deterrence. Deuteronomy 21:18-21 seems to indicate, from a biblical point of view, that capital punishment is a deterrent. It says, quote, if a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and who, when they have chastened him, will not heed them, then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of the city. And they shall say to the elders of the city, this son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones, so that you shall put away this evil person from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear." End of quote. Time magazine made an interesting observation on the subject of the deterrent factor in capital punishment. It said, quote, "In a sense, death's deterrent factor has never really been given a chance in the U.S., even during the comparative execution frenzy of the 1930s, hardly one in 50 murderers was put to death, a scant 2%. One fella estimates that if 25% of the convicted killers were executed, 100 a week or more, there might be a deterrent factor. But it is unthinkable that the U.S. would begin dispatching its victims on such a wholesale basis. Even a rate of 100 executions annually, and high figure given today's judicial guarantees, a killer's chances of getting caught, convicted, and executed would for him be comfortably low, 25 to 1. End of quote. But all of this is from the Old Testament. What about the New Testament? Jesus never taught revenge. He didn't stone the woman taken in adultery. Does the New Testament support the teaching of capital punishment? Romans 13:4 teaches that the government has the right to use the sword to oppose evil. Paul says, quote, "For he," that is the ruler, "is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil." End of quote. The sword is an instrument of death. One professor has said, quote, "While it is true that the sword may have included other rightful restraints in proper functioning of government, like fines, imprisonment, confiscation of property, it clearly includes execution of the death penalty." The word sword is significant. End of quote. He goes on to point out that the word sword was an instrument of death. There is no question but that the word sword in Romans 13 means an instrument of death. But that same word is used in Acts 12:2 of the execution of James. Furthermore, when Paul was arrested in Jerusalem, he appealed to Caesar and was transported to Rome. Before Felix, he said, quote, "I do not object to dying." Acts 25, verse 11. Paul recognized the validity of capital punishment even in his own case. The principle of capital punishment was established in Genesis 9:6, elaborated on in the Mosaic Law, not eliminated by the teaching of Jesus, embraced by the epistles, and exemplified in the life of Paul. Someone might ask, does not the sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill, eliminate capital punishment? The answer is no. The Hebrew word translated kill means to murder. The New Testament always translates the sixth commandment, thou shalt not murder. But then it is obvious that God did not intend that the commandment to include all killing. He who issued the commandment also issued the order to stone to death violators of the law and to kill the enemy in war. Conclusion, summary, bottom line, the Bible teaches the death penalty. Should we kill the death penalty? Absolutely not. As we've seen, the scripture teaches that capital punishment is a deterrent. Great Britain abolished the death penalty in 1965. In 1972, the Wall Street Journal reported, "There has been a sharp rise in armed robberies and violent crime throughout Britain since 1965, when the death penalty was dropped, and more criminals seem to carry guns now." End of quote. Beyond that, the Bible teaches that the purpose of government is to punish those who do evil. 2 Peter 2:13. Capital punishment is evidently one of the ways this purpose is carried out. If we do not, as a society, reinstitute the death penalty, individuals could start getting vengeance on their own. One deeply religious man shot the rapist murderer of his daughter and was later freed on a technicality. Let's face it, some men have committed such unthinkable crimes that they ought to die. The Times article that was quoted earlier reported such a case. Quote, "On the night of June 3, 1973, a Chevrolet Caprice driven by a woman was forced off Interstate 57 in southern Cook County, Illinois, by a car carrying four men. One of them pointed a 12-gauge shotgun at her, ordered her to strip, and then climbed through a barbed wire fence on the side of the road. As she begged for her life, her assailant thrust the shotgun barrel into her vagina and fired. After watching her agonize for several minutes, he finished her off with a blast to the throat. Less than an hour later, the meandering motorist stopped another car and told the man and the woman inside to get out and lay down on the side of the road. The couple pleaded for mercy, saying that they were engaged to be married in 6 months. The man with the shotgun said, 'Kiss your last kiss,' then shot both of them in the back, killing them. The total take for the three murders and two robberies? $54, two watches, an engagement ring, and a wedding band." End of quote from Time magazine. God says that killers ought to die.